driving kills the holiday spirit. Drive sober. Drive smart. Extra enforcement on roads now. A message from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety.
KFAI is proud to present Rosie at the 7th Street Entry on Wednesday, January 8th. Full of intentional lyrics and melodies, local singer-songwriter Rosie will leave you inspired and full of love. Opening up the show are fellow local artists Jillian Ray, Bathtub Sig, and Bryn Batani. Tickets for Rosie can be found at First Avenue website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
At KFAI, we know the difference between tactical
and tactile.
KFAI is flexible, versatile, and fluent in multiple genres. It covers world music like no commercial station can. Program hosts strategically map out their shows by hand, giving them an advantage over automated, algorithm-generated playlists. Tactical.
KFAI is tactile because it's a safe space. It gives me the feels when I listen to how much the program hosts care about their shows and how much they appreciate the listeners and everyone that donates at KFAI.org. KFAI is a perfect blend of safe
and secure because KFAI is non-commercial, community-powered, tactically tactile radio.
Do you need a hug?
KFAI is pleased to present a dual album release show with hardcore horror enthusiasts Wolf Mask and New Death Dealer's Caustic Abyss Saturday, January 18th at the Turf Club in St. Paul. With support from Cobra Czar, Necrodisc, and Den of Thieves, this show is guaranteed to be more fun than a night down at the sewage plant. Tickets for Wolf Mask, Caustic Abyss, Cobra Czar, Necrodisc, and Den of Thieves are available now at First Avenue's website. Visit first-avenue.com for more details.
Hello, Counterstories listeners. We have been doing this show in various formats for 10 years this year. In all those years, it has always been the four of us, myself, Halee Lee, Luz Maria Frias, Anthony Galloway, and Don Eubanks. However, we are sad to report that Don has passed away. He was our friend, he was a mentor and a teacher, and he was our family member. In the weeks to come, as we take time to grieve, mend, and reflect on Don's life and his immense impact throughout the state, we will be re-airing some of Don's favorite episodes and topics.
It's my favorite time of day. This is Counter Stories, a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else. I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate of Dendros Group.
I'm Halee Lee, owner of the Other Media Group, Counterstories producer and VP of programming at Ampers.
And I'm Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments or opinions I hold are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
And Anthony Galloway is unable to join us today, but I'm extremely happy to announce that we have three wonderful guests joining us today. The three of them worked on a project. I'll have them introduce themselves and talk a little bit about what the Truth Project was about.
Hello, Buju. My name is Misty Blue. I'm a member of the White Earth Nation. I also have descendancy and relatives out at Lower Sioux Indian Community. I was appointed by the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council to be the project coordinator for this. So it was a partnership between MIAC, the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and the University of Minnesota Office of Tribal Nations Relations.
And Buju, everyone, Adriana Goodwin, Indigenous Cause, Washkuba Nasiqua Nindigo, Miss Kwagami Wizagai Gunning Nindun Jaba. Greetings, my colonized name is Adriana Goodwin. I'm a citizen of the Red Lake Nation. My role in the project is a researcher, and I was also a tribal research fellow appointed by the Red Lake Nation.
Anin, Ogabewa Sikwe Indigenous Kaz Gasaga Squajime Kag in Dunjba, Gamisquawako Kag in Dayan. I'm Lori Harper. I'm the Director of Education for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe, and I was a Truth Research Fellow under this project appointed by the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe.
Thank you and welcome to Counter Stories. Last week, I just happened to catch a report where you guys were talking about this research project concerning the University of Minnesota that you call the Truth Project. And so, Misty, I'm wondering if you could explain what the Truth Project is and kind of go over some of the summary findings of this report.
Sure. So we're excited that the report is out and available on the MIAC website. It has been a long time coming. We've been working really, really hard on this for years at this point, honestly. And what it is it is an examination of tribal university relations, past, present, and future. So as you might already know, the University of Minnesota is a land grab university, and so it was able to establish itself through the wealth transfer and wealth accumulation made from land grabs. We wanted to open up this conversation because it wasn't something that has really been discussed in detail, and the University of Minnesota really hasn't cultivated those strong relationships with tribes up until this point. So the impetus of this work really was twofold. I think first it was Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, MIAC, issued a series of resolutions back in June of 2020 that was calling on the university to be better relatives with tribal nations and tribal members and the community as a whole. And it was also, there was an expose published in High Country News that really examined this land expropriation, but it examined it across the board. So they went completely wide and went to, it started exploring all 52 land grab universities and the land that they received, and were able to map it out. And what our project endeavored to do was to start to go deep and start to look deeply at one university and really understand what has happened since the origin or since the start of the University of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
So, Misty, you've said now land grab a couple of times, and just for our listeners wanting to make sure, if you can draw some clarity between land grant and land grab. I have a sense for what you're going to say, but I think that's something fundamentally that we need to clarify early on that might be something that our listeners are dwelling on right now.
So we have chosen in our project to use the word land grab. You know, we often hear land grant institution, land grant university touted, and it's sort of a celebratory denomination. But what we actually found was that during this land, the expropriation of the land, there was actually a lot of violence and harm that happened. And by, you know, celebrating this history, we're not really focusing in and, you know, we're kind of making it revisionist history. We're kind of saying that it's, you know, this great thing that happened, but indeed there was harm and there was violence behind the treaties that, the congressional acts and then the treaties that were part of a land grab.
Well, I think, Misty, I think what, you know, on previous counter stories, I've mentioned land grant. And I think what, you know, if I was to elaborate on that a little bit, most folks don't even understand what land grant means. And it's when you, and or they don't understand when they talk about, you know, they're the fifth generation that lives in Minnesota on farmland. They don't understand the history of that because that land came from us. Mm-hmm. That land was taken from us. And I mean us collectively, Dakota, Ojibwe, and other tribes that have historical ties here to what is now called Minnesota, that land was taken from us through a series of treaties. Mm-hmm. And it mm-hmm. was during that time of treaties that my understanding is that I think the University of Minnesota played a much larger role in what happened even during like the maybe some of the negotiations that happened with the United States government and the tribes at the time, because there are, I think there are a lot of variables that were at play during the during treaty making with many of the different tribes in this region during that time. But they ended up with large parcels of land, some of which may not be attributed directly to the treaties that were made here in Minnesota, but collectively with these 52 other higher institutions of learning, received land as a result of it being taken from tribes in the United States. Is that correct?
Yep, you're describing it well. The university did receive a large grant, I guess. They expropriated a lot of land. We also found out through our research that other university received Anishinaabeg and Dakota land as well. So we, you know, heard from and talked to people at Cornell, MIT, UW-Madison, Ohio State. I believe there was a couple others that we were able to talk to as well and try to understand, you know, how they're reckoning with having received Indigenous land from Minnesota being so far away.
And it was very intentional and deliberate as well. So the university was signatories on those treaties, the founding board of regents. So men like Alexander Ramsey, you'll see him on the 1863 Old Crossing Treaty. You'll see him on other signatories. And so you can't really differentiate if Alexander Ramsey was acting in capacity as board of regent or acting in capacity as the governor of the state of Minnesota. And so it's really hard to see where that distinction is, because it feels really blurred to us through the documentation that Anne Garagiola, she's also a part of our research team. She spent a lot of time really looking at that specific piece of history. And another way that they were able to amass all of this wealth through those sale of lands was through the Permanent University Fund. And that was just one area that the University of Minnesota was able to make, wealth off of, perpetual wealth throughout time. And one of the findings from the Center for Urban and Regional Affairs from the Resilient Community Partners Fellows, that was Kyle Malone, Maddie Bojic, and Shupang Wang, they found that the University of Minnesota received a return on investment of 25,000% from these lands that we're talking about.
One of the big pieces that people don't understand that we learned throughout this research that is never talked about in history, right, in our school settings, whether it's in a K-12 setting or a higher education setting, is that the federal government was broke. They were making promises to American Indian tribes to pay without having any money in place. And so it's really important to understand, like, that background, what Adriana was talking about and what Misty was talking about in who the treaty negotiators were with our ancestors here in this area, in what is now Minnesota. And the University of Minnesota was founded before the state of Minnesota was even a state. You know, like, understanding those pieces of history, that these treaty negotiators were founders of a university, and they were literally, like, one of the I'm at Minnesota Indian Education Association today, and one of the keynotes talked about the actual history of the Ojibwe and Dakota people, and then even further back, like, looking at, like, land and maps and places from the 1700s. And a lot of our research here under the Truth Project focused on that time frame and time period around the founding of the University of Minnesota, right before Minnesota was considered a state. So understanding too that we have that history prior to the University of Minnesota and prior to Minnesota statehood as well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Miigwech.
You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with co-hosts Luz Marie Freyes and Hilly Lee, and guests Misty Blue, Adriana Goodwin, and Lori Harper. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. Our sister shows, Native Lights and Minnesota Native News, is also covering the release and contents of the Truth Report. We'd encourage you to listen to their shows by visiting www.minnesotanativenews.org.
So you've been working on this report for a long time, and now you've got it out. And what was it that you were hoping would come out of this report, this 500-plus page report?
Yeah, I think we... The process that we did this was super important, right? Because this is a really important history, and it's a collective history, and it's one that has been sort of covered and buried for quite some time. And so we were very intentional during the process to do it together. And by that, I mean do that in partnership with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, but also in partnership with each and every tribe here. Also considering, you know, when possible, the people who were exiled from this place at that same time. We talked about 1862. That was the signing of the Morrill Act by President Lincoln. It was also the same year of the U.S.-Dakota Wars. It was also, I just learned yesterday, was the same year as the Ho-Chunk were exiled from Minnesota. So,
Minnesota took the opportunity to exile the Ho-Chunk, even though they weren't involved with the uprising, but they used that opportunity to kick them out of here also. I mean, you know, those are historical pieces that most Minnesotans have no idea about.
Right. And that was 1862. But, you know, once we started looking at that time, that date, we said, actually, the university was founded in 1851. What happened there? Again, Anne Gargiulo went in, started looking at the founding Board of Regents, found out that the initial grant that they had received, they had mismanaged completely the funding. And so they were on the brink of bankruptcy and then had to do the second land grab through the Morrill Act.
Misty, when I was reading the summary, and I'm going to go to a point that both you have alluded to as well as Adriana, is when Adriana was saying it was uncertain whether Ramsey was there as governor or as a regent, you know, part of me is reading your summary and listening to you, and I'm thinking, I can't help but to wonder, that was not a coincidence, right? That they were there keeping the circle tight and small so that they could then strategically pass anti-Indigenous legislation that fulfilled these needs that you're seeing, right? The near brink financial ruins of the university, but also of the government as well. Do you want to speak to that? Because I think that really is something that we need to lift up. Because those are those unspoken stories otherwise that our society begins to create this narrative of heroes and they did all this great stuff. But as you said, it's revisionist, right? And so this is about truth and reconciliation. So I'd love to hear your perspectives on that.
Sure. And I just want to add one point, and then I'm going to let Adriana jump in, actually. The other thing we have to consider, yeah, they were legislators and they were Board of Regents, but they also had their own private companies as well. So that's the other, I think the trifecta that I wanted to just highlight. And I'll let Adriana speak a little bit on that.
Yeah. And so another really interesting piece of this story, again, that Anne was researching was that they also surveyed the entire state of Minnesota or the geographic boundaries of Minnesota. So they were able to identify where those groves of forest that they wanted to cut down and sell. They were able to, you know, identify different waterways. They were able to utilize their inside information to hand pick and to hand select those lands. I also want to take a moment to talk a little bit about those that generational wealth or those private investments that the University of Minnesota and their founding board of regents were able to take advantage of. And so we think of General Mills. So General Mills today was started by Pillsbury, and Pillsbury was on the Board of Regents at one time. And so now today, the General Mills Company, I think they might have sold, but they're worth $1.7 trillion. And it's no coincidence, again, that the University of Minnesota and those men, those people very close to them, were able to hand select those lands. They were able to survey the lands. And so they had that firsthand inside information to that. And what else is really interesting, when they were surveying the lands, they had found that there is a very large drop in the Mississippi River, a very significant place for the Dakota people. And they were able to generate the power from that river to generate power for their mills, to create their flour and all of those things. And so the impacts throughout time, really wanting to emphasize those impacts throughout time. And Lori talks too about that in her report that she did for Leech Lake about the dams. And again, the University of Minnesota was involved in hand selecting and hand picking where those dams would be at along the Mississippi River corridor.
But I think the historical history that the University of Minnesota has taken, I would say, against indigenous populations, especially us here in Minnesota, folks like Ramsey and others representing the Minnesota Territory and the University of Minnesota, they wanted the timber, they wanted all these things. And so they were very intentional in their negotiations with us. Well, I'm sure our forefathers came with a whole different mindset in terms of what we were trying to negotiate with the United States. After these treaties were put in place, and there were still efforts to get the timber, especially at White Earth, if you were a full-blooded Indian, you couldn't sell your plot of land. So how do you prove who's full-blooded or not? So they commissioned Elbert Jenks and this other individual to do a study to help them determine who was full-blooded, and they did so by using the Pima Indians in southwestern United States, who they considered to be the most indigenous tribe that was full-blooded. They go to a whole different region, to a whole different group of individuals that speak a different language, that have a different culture, that these crazy identifying markers to determine who was full-blooded and who wasn't full-blooded. And they use that report to allow the timber companies to come in and take that land for that timber. You're listening to Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks with co-hosts Luz Marie Freyes and Hilly Lee, and guests Misty Blue, Adriana Goodwin, and Lori Harper. This show is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. For our full conversation, please visit counterstories.com. Our sister shows, Native Lights and Minnesota Native News, is also covering the release and contents of the Truth Report. We'd encourage you to listen to their shows by visiting www.minnesotanativenews.org.
So it seems like going to the U of M to do all this research is the way to go, because where else would you go? It's the oldest institution in Minnesota, but they themselves have this whole history of land grabbing and treating the communities that were here and the communities that come later poorly. And yet everyone continues to look to them as kind of the star, because they're our oldest institution. Did you guys personally have any issues like when you were asked to come on this project? I'm wondering because just today I was over doing some research on Hmong history for a project I was doing. And I was going through these old photos that had been donated, and they're old photos from the war. And it's just like mangled up bodies of young Hmong children who, you know, died during the war, who were left behind, who were killed by communists. And I just thought, I don't think I could do this, like live through this trauma again. So what about you guys? Like, I'm really interested in hearing your stories of like, oh yeah, I want to do this project, even though there's so much trauma behind it.
If I can give it just a quick overview and then of the process. So you mentioned research and not trusting the university with this type of research for a number of reasons. And I guess that's why we wanted to lead this. We wanted to have all Native research team, and the way that Tad Johnson at the time, his office, was able to partner with MIAC allowed me as the coordinator to then reach out to all of the tribes. And I, you know, had meetings with every single tribe, and I was telling them, this is the issue. It's not well known. This is, you know, what we're learning right now. And we want to do this together, and we want Native people to be driving this work. And so we were like, send us someone to join our team. And that's how Lori became a part of it. That's how Adriana was appointed as her tribal research fellow. And we have tribal research fellows from each of the tribes.
So you asked about the trauma and how did we navigate and how did we like look at it? One of our first organizational meetings with the whole research team, once all the research team was appointed by their tribal nations, we were asked by Misty and by the University of Minnesota, like, what else can we provide for you? And I suggested, you know, like, we need spiritual guidance. We need to be able to make space for that grief, because what we're going to be delving into is our ancestors' stories. There have been stories told about us, but never through our own lens. Never through our own voices.
In my capacity as a tribal research fellow for the Red Lake Nation, the particular acts that the University of Minnesota committed against young children on a reservation during the 1960s is particularly egregious. These 554 pages are documenting the genocide against our people, and we deserve more. We deserve better. And that's where that action piece comes in. And this is where we need our communities to stand up. This is where we need our communities to continue to demand action. And this is where we need our allies to also utilize the power and the positions that they have in their communities to do something and to push the institutions to change. We have lost so much as a people. We continue to lose so much as a people. Out of 211 American Indian families interviewed in a longitudinal study in the metro area, almost 65% of them live in poverty. We experience some of the highest rates of suicide. We experience some of the highest rates of kidney disease. We have some of the lowest education attainment rates in the entire country. These are those lasting impacts from the dispossession of land that the University of Minnesota committed against our people. This is an international crisis. This is a human rights crisis that we as Indigenous people have experienced. And I think that we even need a more global response to the egregious acts that were committed here.
I think that efforts like the Truth Project substantiates our oral history in terms of our lived experiences as Indigenous individuals in this country. This is Counter Stories. I'm Don Eubanks, member of the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indians and associate of Dendros Group.
I'm Halili, owner of the Other Media Group, VP of Programming at Ampers, and Counter Stories producer.
Luz Maria Frias, Deputy Attorney General with the State of Minnesota. Any comments and opinions that I've stated are strictly my own and should not be attributed to my employer.
Go ahead, Lori, why don't you start?
Okay. And I'm Lori Harper, Director of Education for Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe and a
Truth Research Fellow.
My name is Misty Blue. I'm a member of the White Earth Nation. I also have descendancy and relatives out at Lower Sioux Indian Community. I was appointed to be the project coordinator for this.
And I'm Adriana Goodwin. I'm a citizen of the Red Lake Nation, and I am a truth researcher and dreamer. Miigwech.